Hello, patrons. Hello there. Welcome. I'm joined this morning for me, or whatever the hell time it is for you, by my dear friend Jesse Cox. Hi, Jesse. Hello.
Hello,
How are
hey,
you?
how's it going?
I'm doing
Adam,
good. Yes,
I'm
Jesse.
sorry. I want to let all the patrons know. I promised Adam I'd be here roughly an hour ago, and for some reason I thought that 11 East Coast was 9 Pacific, and so
Time
it
zones are
doesn't
a
add up.
nightmare. Their
That
time
doesn't add
zones are a
up.
living nightmare, and I hate them. It's okay. I forgive
Well,
you. I understand.
what if we just
But
ended it
thank you.
all? What if we just ended time
Yeah,
zones and everything? What if we
it's the
just
same time
all?
everywhere. Time is over. Forget time.
Yeah. Let's just end existence. It'd make it so much easier. A void, an infinite void of darkness would just be so much more pleasant.
Let's just call up Thanos and be like, yo, dog. We're done. We're done with this
Come
shit. Just make it
on. Let's do
100%,
this.
buddy.
Those
A vast and
aren't the
empty universe.
rules. Yeah,
No,
that's not
that's
how it
not how it
works.
works. No. So we're gonna hang out a little bit today, and we're gonna talk about Dungeon World. We're gonna talk about Dungeon World and kind of how it works, because Jesse's gonna run it, and I get to play it,
Oh,
and it's
guide
gonna be
me.
fun.
Guide me.
Yeah,
Take me on an adventure.
So we're gonna talk a little bit about how one might go about game mastering Dungeon World, and
Sure.
Jesse, I'll give you the gist of how the game operates, and then we can kind of just go back and forth if you have questions or whatever.
Okay.
So you will find, I think, that even more than Tales from the Loop, Dungeon World requires very little in terms of mechanics from you, in the sense that you're not gonna have to remember much of the rules of the game.
Nice.
Thinking
Okay.
about it, really, the only kind of mechanical stuff in the way we normally think about these things, the only really mechanical stuff that the GM thinks about in a one shot, especially, is like how many hit points do monsters have and how much damage do they deal. Everything else is sort of on the player end, because the GM in Dungeon World doesn't roll dice. You don't say, I'm going to make an attack roll and then roll things. You respond predominantly to the players either failing a roll or looking at you with that look that players get sometimes, where they're like, I would like to try this thing. What happens, Jesse? What is the result of this thing I would like to try?
Okay.
And
All right.
so basically, Dungeon World gives you some tools for guidance, but I'll let you know what to expect in terms of the rules. So the characters all have what the game calls basic moves, which are the things that every character can do with some degree of reliability around the outcome. So a character can theoretically do anything, right? Like if I say to you, Jesse, I would like to open my mind to the psychic weft of the universe, and I would like to use that to make the goblin do what I want, even though I have no ability that allows me to do that. That's me turning the narrative over to you to say, what happens when I do that? And you are within your reach to say nothing, but we'll talk about how to choose your responses to those things. But the things that the players can reliably do with the same understanding of what might happen are called moves. So in this game, in Dungeon World, the characters are all semi-experienced adventurer types in a fantasy adventure universe. So they are people who are able to, fight with weapons, and they can kind of recall information that they might know about the world. They can observe things that are going on around them. And these basic moves are available to all of the PCs. Any of us will be able to just say, I would like to do this move, or I'm going to do this thing. And you might say, or anyone at the table might say, that sounds like you're making this move.
Is it a set thing or is it it's sort of an it's like it's kind of this, it's kind of that. Like, what are the basic moves?
So the basic moves in the game are hack and slash. So each move is made up of a couple of components. So there's the move has a name, it has a trigger, a fictional trigger that if a player describes themselves doing this thing, we all know, oh, that's the move. And then it has a stat that's attached to it, and then it has results. So for example, hack and slash is triggered when a player describes themselves, their character, attacking an enemy in melee. So this might be drubbing someone over the head with a club, or dueling with swords, or whatever, but you kind of know it when it happens. And so that's the trigger for hack and slash. And in the game, all the mechanics are 2d6 plus or minus a stat. And the stats are the same as Dungeons and Dragons. So strength, dex, Constitution, Intelligence, Wisdom, and Charisma. So when you hack and slash, you are rolling with your strength. So you roll 2d6 and you add or subtract your strength. And for most moves, there's just three things that can happen. You'll get a 10 or better on that result, which means you get what you want and maybe a little extra. So
the 2d6 plus or minus the stat. Sorry, everyone hearing me go clack, 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 clack. I'm taking furious notes.
It's great.
So if you were, the 2d6 plus or minus the stat, that's that in the whole like scheme of things, there's the trigger, the stats, and the results. That's the stat bit then.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. So if my strength will be anywhere between -3 and +3, depending on how I build my character, and I'm going to roll 2d6 and I'm going to add that. And when I hack and slash, I always roll with strength. And I'm going to get one of these set results. So that way I know as a player, when I go in, I can assume that I can get one of these results. I know what might happen. The game is built on this idea of player certainty as being codified by moves. So if I get a 10 or better, and this is true of all the moves where you roll, it's 10 or better means you get what you want and then maybe a little extra. So with a hack and slash, you get to deal your character's damage to the enemy and there's no counterattack. So I just get to roll. If I have, if I'm a fighter, I can roll a d10 of damage. I can deal that to the enemy and you don't get to do anything else, right? Avoiding any reprisal. But if I want to, because it's a 10 or better, I can choose to do an extra d6 of damage. But if I do, that lets you, Jesse, make a move. And that might be a counterattack. It might be some other complication. We'll talk about GM moves in a second. Okay. Most of the time, though, the game falls into the 7-9 result because it's mathematically, that's how the curve plays out. Most of the time, we're going to be rolling 7-9, which for all moves means you get what you want. It's a fundamental success, but it will be complicated by something. So in this case, on a 7-9, I deal my damage to my enemy, but the enemy gets to do something to me. The enemy makes an attack. So that might be they knock my sword out of my hand. It might be they claw my face with their talons. It might be whatever. That's up to you. And you know kind of the narrative situation. You get to make a move. Now, if I miss, which is a 6 or less, I don't get any good stuff. You get to make a move according to the situation. And then I get a point of experience. Characters learn from their failures. And that's most of the moves in the game. It's going to be roll plus a stat and one of those three results.
Interesting. So if I roll like a 4, I end up getting, I don't know, smacked down to the ground, but I gain, is it like a real-time experience thing? Like I gain 2 XP because I learned not to do that again.
Yes. Yeah. It's you get 1 XP every time you fail. And that happens on the spot. Yeah. Yeah. There's some other stuff that triggers XP gain, but that's at the end of the session. It's like a little check-in at the end. Cool. So that's the core structure of the moves for the basic moves. So all the characters can hack and slash. They can volley, which is shooting or throwing weapons at an enemy. They can defend. They can spout lore. They can discern realities. So the difference between those are like spout lore is, you know, that moment in an RPG where you're like, my character is an elf. I wouldn't know about elf stuff. Jesse, what elf stuff do I know about this elf? Right. And then I roll on a 10 plus. You tell me something interesting and useful. On a 7-9, you tell me something interesting, but I got to make up I got to find some way to use it.
Sure.
And on a miss, maybe it's like you don't recall anything, or it's like, you know this, but it's a lie. Like your character, and I do this with players on the spout lore and miss all the time, where I'm like, you think that elves are allergic to sand. That's wrong. Your character is wrong, but that's what you think. Right. Okay. And then we can be like, cool, my character made a mistake, but I'm going to play it. You can discern realities, which is basically when a player looks at you to interrogate the situation, when they're like, what's this guy thinking or doing? Or what's going on here? Or like they just say, like, I stop and take a look around. That's discern realities, and it lets us ask you questions as players. And then parlay. And parlaying is like getting an NPC to do what you want. Now, a lot of the time, there will be stuff that happens that's either responding to a threat, and it kind of feels like a move, but we can't figure out which one it is, or we just want to get something done and there isn't a specific move for it. You can call for what's called Defy Danger. And Defy Danger it's triggered when you act despite an imminent threat or suffer a calamity. So when you say, like, say I say to you, okay, I want to swim over to the, I want to swim across the river because the bridge is out. I want to swim across the river. And you say to me, well, the river is cold and it's running fast. You still want to do it? And I'll say, yes, I will. And you can say, okay, defy danger with your constitution. And the danger is that you get swept away. And on a 10 plus, I would get across the river. On a 7 to 9, you might say, okay, you have a choice, right? You can turn back halfway or you can get to the other side, but your bag gets wrenched off your back and swept downriver, right?
Am I telling them the
hard bargain.
Am I telling them this before they roll?
No. You would tell me this after. Yeah, because then you don't want to give us the opportunity to back out, right? Now there is some flexibility in there, and we'll talk about GM moves and how you do that, making soft moves or hard moves. But those are the core moves. And when we play, because I have the most experience with the moves, I'll help and be like, hey, that sounds like this thing, and then we'll take a second and be like, yeah, that's what I was trying to do, or like, no, I wasn't really trying to attack the guy. I was trying to like scare him, right? And so we'll work as a group at the table to figure out what moves are being triggered.
So again, just to go through it, there's hack and slash, volley, defend, spout lore, discern realities, parlay, defy danger.
Yes. Yeah. And there's some special moves like when you die or when you make camp or if we travel through like a long distance, there's sort of a montage like move. I'll send you all of the stuff for Dungeon World. All these moves are online and we'll be able to refer to them as we play.
I'm just like writing little notes like, oh, this is totally how I would use this and this is how this would work. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like
So that's all the stuff that every class can do. And then the classes themselves just expand on that. Like clerics get a move for casting spells and for praying, druids get a move for shapeshifting, fighters get a special weapon. And you don't have to be familiar with all of those because the players, that's their job, is just to know what their special stuff is.
Sure.
And so that just adds on moves that they get.
And for each of these things, it's all depending on what I ask the player to roll. So because I know you said hack and slash that you were like, well, I would use strength. Is hack and slash always strength or can it be something else?
So hack and slash is always strength, but there are some special abilities that some classes get that say it's this instead, right? You may hack and slash with dexterity. Some things modify that. But yeah, those moves are generally codified to a specific stat. So the idea, the flow of play, is that the GM presents the current fiction as it stands. So like what's going on, where you are, what's happening, and then ask someone, what do you do? Right. That is the most important question in the game that keeps the game moving. You try to end everything you say with like, here's some stuff. What do you do? Because that gives us the impetus to act, right? It's about acting in the fiction. This is true whether we're in a fight, this is true whether we're exploring, whether we're talking, whatever's happening. You describe the situation as it stands to give us the information we need to act, and then you say, what do you do? And in a frantic combat situation, instead of there's no initiative or anything, it's up to you to decide who is being affected by what thing and how you want each person to act. So I might say, I fire an arrow at the orcs that are fighting JP's character, and I might get a miss, and you might say, okay, you wing JP by accident. JP, what are you going to do? You're surrounded by orcs. Your friend just hits you with an arrow by accident. JP gets to make a hack and slash. Maybe JP kills one of the orcs. Then you cut over to another player, and you say, okay, you see JP fighting these orcs. He's killed one, but he's still surrounded. What are you going to do? And so for you, it's the sort of moving the spotlight around and deciding... Okay. You, what are you doing? Now you, what are you going to do? And that happens that's sort of throughout the game.
So the combat initiation then would be something like, I would say, the four of you entered a cavern, and in the cavern there's a bunch of orcs watching hentai, and it's very, very loud. You're at the entrance, and they can't see you. What do you do? Like, that kind of thing?
And then we say... Yeah, so we could say, like, I step out of the shadows and I shout at them, you there, stop watching that hentai. And then I might make a parlay, right? Because I might say, I draw my sword and I threaten them and I have leverage over them now. The threat is, stop watching hentai or I will murder you. And then I'll roll.
Right.
And if I fail, you could say, cool, well, they pick up their flat screen television and throw it at you. What do you do? And then I would say, I grab JP and I put him in the way. And then you'd be like, okay, cool. JP, do you want to let him throw you in the way? And yeah, and so we just kind of move from action to action.
So do I need to do that for, is that sort of the flow of everything? So if
yes,
you succeed, I still say, what do you, I'm still like, what do you do? And if you fail,
yeah,
I'm like, okay, these guys are coming at you. What do you do? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 So success on a player success, you have less to do than on a failure, because on a success, whatever I wanted comes to pass, and then the next thing happens. Yeah.
So so basically, on a
failure, it's like yeah,
it's if you succeed, I'm like, okay, what do you want to do with that success? Like, what was the objective of you standing out there and being like, stop watching that? Like, what did you want them to do? And then on a failure, it's like, these guys did a thing. What's your reaction? Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And the idea is just continually moving from, moving from thing to thing, saying like, this happens, then this happens, and then this happens. What are you going to do each way along the way? So the basic flow is the GM describes the situation, asks, what do you do? Someone responds describing their action. We check to see if that action is a move, right? Like if I just say, I belch loudly in disgust, probably not a move. But if I say, hold on, everybody, I need to take a look around before we come in and harass these orcs, I'm probably discerning realities, right? So we all check together if there's a move. If there isn't a move, then it just goes back to you, right? If I say, I belch loudly, you can say, now it's your turn to make a move. You say, oh, well, you alert the orcs and they leap to their feet, right? You can see them turning, grabbing weapons. What do you do? And then we repeat that flow. If there is a move, then we check to see what happens mechanically. Do we roll? Does a thing just trigger? But ultimately, it always falls back to see what happens and what is going on, and that's the GM. And your framework for describing the game to us, to the players, is built on sort of three core things. You have an agenda that you're trying to do all the time. You have principles that support and guide you through that agenda, and then you have moves that you make, and these are the specific things that you narrate. Now, most of the time, even me, like years and years on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of running this game, I don't specifically necessarily sit down and look at the moves and like be like, I'm going to pick this thing and do it. Because part of the rules are not saying the name of your move when you're the GM, right? Like as a GM, you can reveal an unwelcome truth. You can separate them. You can put someone in a spot. You can tell them the consequences and ask, but you don't say that. You don't say like, I am going to separate you. You say, all right, JP, you run into the room and you failed your defy danger to get across the slippery floor. You slip and you fall and you tumble down into the ravine. What you're really doing is you're separating them. You're making the separate them move. Right. But you don't say that out loud, right? They're not code words or special things. You just do those things.
Okay.
So yep. The moves are the moment-to-moment things that help you narrate a specific style of game. Dungeon World is full of, as you can kind of feel out, it's full of momentum. It's about kind of building on what came before and sort of driving forward through the game. Your moves will help you do that. And the moves are the granular moment-to-moment stuff that support your principles. And the principles of the game are kind of your guiding light, like the things that you want to think about while you're playing. So things like naming every person, right? You don't want to just say you see a farmhand. You want to have in your head like, oh, this farmhand is like a character with a name. It doesn't mean that they have to have like a fully fleshed out background or anything, but like in your mind, treat all of the characters as if they could become interesting or important.
Things
like one of my favorites is be a fan of the characters. So being a fan of the characters in Dungeon World doesn't mean giving us what we want all the time. It's about understanding the protagonists of the story, cheering for their victories and lamenting their defeats. You're not here to push us in a particular direction, but to give us stuff to make the characters engage, right, in the world. Because sometimes, like, if you're watching a TV show and you really like a character, you're not going to enjoy if they just get what they want all the time, because then you never get to learn anything about them. But you want to be like, oh, this is really cool. What would happen if you know, Superman lost his powers for an episode. Like, we put him in a situation where we can learn more about the character and we can understand them better because we're a fan of the character and we want to, like, push them into an interesting place. So, like, that's one of your principles. I think the most important principle of all of them is asking questions and using the answers. So there's kind of an authority, like, dial in Dungeon World over how much the GM gets to make up or decides to make up or put in the world. So a traditional game like Dungeons and Dragons, the players are responsible for authoring their character's statements. Like, what does your character say and what does your character do? And, like, probably think about what your character thinks and feels, right? The GM is responsible for everything else. Now, the dial, you can turn it back a little ways, and as the GM, you can use this principle, this ask questions and use the answers, to let the players fill stuff in about the world. Like, if somebody plays a cleric, they probably care about, like, the gods and religion and temples and what is or isn't sacred or what is or isn't holy in the world. And You as the GM may not care as much as they do about that stuff. So if they say to you, if a player is playing a cleric and they say to you, like, oh, what kind of gods, you know, live in this, or what kind of gods have temples in this city? And if you don't care or don't have an idea or just want to, like, let the player ask, you could turn it back on them and say, I don't know, what do you think? Like, does your god have a temple here? Who's your god's enemies? Do they have a temple, right?
Gotcha.
So this idea of asking questions, and then you're just making notes, right? You're like, if I say, and this is especially important in the character creation section, where if I say, I'm a cleric, and my god is, Torvir, god of fire. You might say, does Torvir have any enemies? Is there another god that is your opponent? Is there a god of water that you hate? How do you get along with the other gods? Is that a personal feeling? Is that something that, is mandated by dogma? And the reason that you want to ask all these questions during character creation is that, at least for me, I don't generally prep much, if anything at all, when I come to the table, because I just build it all during character creation. Because I'm like, okay, I need, like, an antagonist, and I need a situation, and I need some tension in the party. And for a one shot, like, you're not going to get much done. So it's like, you really just need one thing. And so you'll often be able to say, okay, well, the cleric's god has an enemy, and the fighter has a monster that the one that got away. So probably that monster serves the cleric's god's enemy. And the bard is here to tell a story about the final battle with this monster. The fighter has hunted them to the end of the earth. And you as the GM, you haven't prepped any of that. You just asked a bunch of questions, made some notes, and connected those little bits and pieces. And if we do character creation before we do the session, then you have all of this time between character creation and the first session to use the stuff that we give you, because you're asking the right questions, to create your little story and to interject your own prep into that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really easy. I find if you're comfortable with improvisation, it's really easy to GM because you don't really have to do a lot of work. You just need to put the pieces together. You don't have to design the puzzle.
I love the idea that you like.
I usually will ask players, because this is the thing, is when we do our character stuff, the race and the class that we choose kind of signals to the rest of the party that we're interested in that stuff. And I like looking at, like, oh, it's a party of humans, except you're the only elf. Well, I guess you get to tell me everything that you're interested in about elves. Like, are elves immortal? Are they tall? Are they short? How do they like humans? But the humans have to, like, agree or discuss what the humans think and feel, right? So you get to kind of, like, spotlight people's passions in the game and what they're interested in.
This is very cool. I love the idea that as they're creating themselves, they're creating the world that we've sort of established. Like, well, what is it? You tell me, what was that like? I think that's fascinating. Yeah. Then you can use that against them if you need to.
Well, it's not even if you need to, you 100% do. Like, it's getting people to tell you, because again, we want the same thing, right? Like, players want to have interesting, we want to be a fan of our character and each other's characters too. And so when you ask us, fighter, what is your lowest moment? Like, who was the enemy that in your moment of need, like, defeated you? You know, who shattered your shield and left you alive to suffer? We're gonna be like, awesome. Like, yes, I have an arch nemesis, totally. Like, it's sure. This guy. And then we just sit and we hope and wait to see when later you're like, aha, you see this soldier that you've just slain, and, you know, pinning his cloak, you see the sigil of your arch enemy, and you're just like, oh yes, I'm gonna go get that guy. And so it builds passion in the players and kind of drives everybody's attachment to the ongoing scenario. And the whole thing, the agenda, the sort of 3 points that make up like everything you're trying to do while you GM Dungeon World is portraying a fantastic world, right? Giving us a world in which we can have adventures and struggle against enemies and like do the things that we are empowered to do, right? Like you have given us this toolbox full of exciting stuff that we can use in the form of our moves and our character choices that we've made. And then it's your job to present a world where we can use those tools to build the story. And this kind of just means like when you're making the game, when you're creating the moment-to-moment stuff at the table, just like filling the characters' lives with adventure, right? Like an engaging and dynamic world. The characters are adventurers that are always caught up in some kind of world-threatening danger or scheme or whatever. And that's good, right? Just like not letting the characters rest. It's a game of high speed, kind of like, and then what do you do? Like, okay, you go to the inn. Great. You go to bed. You're woken up by screams in the street. What do you do? And you're like, oh God, more stuff. All right, here we go. Which is why it works for one shots, right? Because you have the 4 hours to just like bang out as much cool shit as you can. Yeah. And then lastly, the most important part of the agenda is that we play to find out what happens. Right? It's about playing with questions in mind. And part of GM prep is once we've done character creation, you're going to want to come away with not like specific events, right? Like it's not about saying, okay, the adventure will begin here, then they'll go here, they'll do this, then they'll go here, this will happen, and by the end, the script will be complete and they will fight the last boss. You want to come away with questions. You want to be like, I wonder if Avon and Thrandir will be able to defeat the, you know, Howling Wench of the Woods. I wonder if the paladin will be able to hold to his vows even when they go to the City of Forbidden Delights. Now, like, it's about stakes questions. Like, what could happen? As the GM, you want to come to the table with things that you are interested in finding out the answer to rather than answers that you want the players to walk their way through already. Which can mean that sometimes the game will take an unexpected direction, right? Like, if you come to the table with questions, it's more about the journey. It's about playing to find out how we answer those questions. So that way you're less likely to feel flummoxed or like unsure when we're like, yeah, we're going to do this thing nobody expected, or something's going to happen. Someone's going to fail a move. And in the moment you're like, oh, it makes way more sense to have all of you, you know, teleported to the 15th level of hell right now. Like that just seems in the moment to be the thing rather than having to stick to a more structured plan. So it's about all of us just being like really interested and invested in the idea of like, what's going to happen? What is this adventure going to be like? And you will find, I imagine, after character creation that your head is just like full of those sorts of things. There'll be all kinds
really
of things
that
you're interested in finding out. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited for that.
I really like, cool. Yeah, I really like GMing it because I get so invested in the characters and so interested in like the world that we all sort of build together during character creation. And then you just want to explore it. Yeah. So I think the only other like the only mechanical thing that you'll want to know is like when you're playing the game, if we get into a like fight situation, pretty much you'll just want to like guess at like a number of like monsters. And because you have so much more control over what happens, you can be like, the goblins run away, or like you get captured. Like you don't, there isn't this situation where you're like forced to kill a character, you know, like in D&D where you're like, yeah, okay, well, we're in a fight and the dragon takes the attack action and I rolled my d20 and I rolled 46 and I have to kill you. You are dead. You can do a ton of other stuff instead, right? Deal damage is only one of the GM moves. You can reveal unwelcome truths. You can use up resources. You can give an opportunity, right? Even on a failure. The way that we differentiate the choices that you make are between what we call sort of soft moves and hard moves. A soft move is something where you're kind of threatening or implying something bad might happen, right? Okay. Like if I say to you, I stride cockily up to the guard at the gate, that's me looking to you because I'm not making a move. I'm looking to you to be like, what happens when I do that? You get to make a move. You could, if you want to, if you think it was appropriate, you could be like, cool, the guy with the crossbow standing up on the thing shoots you in the chest. Like that's a completely valid, like I don't, but you generally want to be softer than that. You want to be like, you hear the creak of someone loading a crossbow on the parapets. What do you do? And then I could be like, I turn around and walk away, or I could just continue swaggering forward. In which case you get to make a move and you'd be like, cool, they shoot at you. Right. Okay. So there's a difference there between a soft move being the one without any irrevocable consequence. It's something not all that bad. It's revealing that something is going to happen, but has not yet happened. And it gives you a chance to like back off or dodge out of danger or press on bravely, right? To trigger defy danger and be like, you know, like I've had a situation where the bard, who had a significant charisma and who had talked a lot throughout the game about how handsome they were, a bard said, I'll approach the wizard. And I said to him, I'm like, okay, well, he's in the middle of conjuring a spell. He's got an angry look on his face. He's not happy that you're here. What are you going to do? And they were like, I am going to wait until the moment that they release the spell, and I will flash them my winningest smile so that at the last moment they flinch because they can't bear to destroy something so beautiful. And I was like, okay, defy danger with your charisma. And they succeeded. And I was like, well, the wizard hurls the fireball at you, but at the last minute, you know, he turns away and the fireball hits the wall instead. And so you have this freedom to make these like soft and hard moves as you go. And if we ignore the soft move, or if there is a failure involved there, then you can start making hard moves. Moves with immediate consequences, moves that change the situation, moves that put the characters into a worse position than they're in now. And then you just kind of let it all snowball from one thing to another. Moves are sort of the cinematic beat of the scene that the characters are in.
Cool.
Yeah.
Going back to agendas and principles.
Mm-hmm.
Is that anything that do those have like when you talk about principles, what is that? Like the world that we've established, like the rules.
So your principles are the sort of fundamentals of GMing this game in particular. So the list of principles are draw maps but leave blanks, right? So don't come with everything prepped. Create space for the players. Address the characters, not the players. Right? This is something that we encourage people to do, to say, not Tony, is Dunwick doing something about the white? Dunwick, what are you going to do about that white? It keeps the game focused on the fiction rather than the players at the table. Embrace the fantastic, right? That's a principle. Thinking about fantasy, right? Floating cities, islands made out of dead gods, spirit familiars, talking statues, like just like magical shit. Like think about that. Embrace cool, fantastic stuff. And those are your principles, right? Things like that. There's a list of them, but you know, being a fan of the characters, thinking dangerously, beginning and ending with the story that we're telling, and thinking about what's happening off screen too. And those are all principles that will kind of guide you. You likely will think about them mostly during the space between character creation and when we play. But they're just like a guiding light to cool. kind of help you decide what moves to make and what have you. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where I would say the only prep you really need to do before character creation is that kind of like loose creative like prep, like just thinking about fantasy stuff, like just right. like little bits and pieces of things in fantasy that seem cool to you. And maybe make some notes about that, but they don't have to be related to the game because there's no game yet. It can just be like, you know, cult of skeleton worshippers. Question mark, right? Your notes should all just be sort of like things I might be interested as a GM. And then when we come to the table and we start making characters, someone will say something that will remind you of little notes. Like someone might be like, well, my great grandma was in a cult. And you might be like, oh, was it the skeleton worshiping cult? And I'd be like, oh yeah, of course. Like totally. That makes sense that old Meemaw would have, you know, been waiting for the skeleton within to emerge.
She was wild. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so that your kind of your mandate now is just kind of let your brain percolate on fantasy shit, and then we'll do character creation, and that'll help hone it all in, and then you'll use those details to flesh out the situation that we're gonna kind of explore in the game.
Cool.
Yeah.
When it comes to character creation, is there anything that I need to know or do for that?
No. We'll walk through it. Yeah, I'll send you there's a really cool little fan supplement that Jonso Metzger did called Truncheon World. That's like a truncated like version of all the rules of the game. I'll send that to you because it's got some good questions in it, but your job during character creation is just to like ask questions. I'll help facilitate any of the rules stuff.
Okay.
Because I'll be making a character with everybody, and there's very specific like step one, step two, step three, and whatever. Your job is just like listen to what the players are saying, make notes, and ask questions when stuff seems interesting to you. And we'll use character creation not only to make the characters, but to help flesh out the world, and then also to understand why the characters are together. The last step of character creation is what's called bonds. And in Bonds, we do a little Mad Libs thing where we fill out the character's names in a list of little statements. And that'll help put like, why do all these characters know each other? What are their
Why are they
relationships? And
rolling
then you
together?
can,
Yeah, okay.
yeah. And then that'll give you more fuel to say, oh, well, the fighter in the party, they chose this thing where they think that the thief in the party is like soft and weak. How can I give the thief an opportunity to prove that they're like actually kind of tough? Or maybe prove that they are a squishy loser, just like the fighter thinks, right? And so your job there is just asking an interesting question, like, is that true? Yeah.
Okay,
So yeah.
very cool. Yeah, this I
Yeah.
love the core concept of this game. It's very, very cool. So I'm excited to try it and not screw it up.
Yeah,
It's
well,
my plan.
the mechanical stuff is easy. Being the GM, it's just about doing the thing that seems like fun and cool and interesting in the moment. And I'll be there to handle any of the rules questions, of
Thank
which there'll be
God.
few. But rules are more player level stuff than they are GM stuff. For you, it's just about being like creative brain, which should be easy for you. So
All right, yeah, a lot of
yeah.
wacky names like Snoozle Leaf Baggin and
Perfect. Perfect.
Doctor Slap and Tickle. He's a mad scientist.
I can't wait. So my experience with Dungeon World, and this is not the universal experience, but I tend to find that it ends up being like kind of anachronistic in the way that like someone will be like, I'm a paladin, I'm a wizard, and someone's like, I'm a fighter, my character wears a cowboy hat and worships John Wayne. And like, just sometimes players will just think of things and you're like, I did not expect or anticipate that. That seems weird, but let's do it. Let's go ahead and roll
Yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
And
John
part of
Wayne
character
spelled
creation.
like
Yeah.
JIAN. John Way is his real name, and he is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think the thing is like, so when we made the game, the tone in terms of like seriousness versus silliness and like comedy versus drama, it's really like the first Ghostbusters movie. That's kind of the
Okay.
tone that this game is by default. Like in Ghostbusters, there's some serious shit going on. Like New York is in for real legitimate danger and there's scary supernatural stuff going on. But the characters are just kind of like, well, this is the situation we're in and we're just gonna have to deal with it. And it's like, it's comedic when it needs to be, but serious when it needs to be too. And that's sort of that was our tonal like touch point for the game when we wrote it. Obviously, your
Sure,
mileage may
sure.
vary, but that's sort of where we started from.
So it has like the Marvel movie vibe,
Yeah, totally.
where
Yeah.
there's like
Yeah.
clearly comedy in the middle of like a city being destroyed. And Tony Stark has to have a one-liner, and they're like, there are people dying, Tony. Yeah,
You're right.
okay.
Moments of drama and intensity, but also this sense of like these characters are adventurers, right? This is their life. This is what they do. And we get to see them. We get to be a fan of them, right? We get to watch them do their thing. And sometimes being a fan of Tony Stark is like, I wonder what would happen if he got stabbed in the chest. Like, what is Tony like at his worst? But yeah, it fluctuates, and we'll kind of, part of the GM's job is like reading the room and knowing when to make hard moves and how to push stuff back and forth. Yeah, cool. So that's it. That's the overlay. Feel free to take a flip through the book. I find looking through the monsters section and just seeing what kind of like monsters are interesting to me is a good place to kind of get some inspiration. But just like take notes, think about fantasy stuff, and then we'll make our characters, and then that's when the real game starts.
Awesome. I'm really excited. This is gonna be super fun.
Cool, man. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it too. I don't get to play Dungeon World too often, so it's always a delight when I do. Cool, friend. Well, thank you. I'm excited. I'm not sure we have like a specific, I'm not sure we have a specific date or anything. And you notice JP is the only person that I was talking about for cast. So I don't know if we've announced that either, but I'll let JP do all of that stuff. We'll have a date and a cast for the show when we have them. And you can keep an eye on, keep an eye on JP for that, everybody. Patrons, thank you for your continued support. And I hope that this, I hope this was interesting and cool and that maybe it helped you for your own Dungeon World stuff. And we'll see you for the show. That's it from us.
Bye. Yeah. Thanks. Bye, everybody. That was awesome. Get ready. It's going to be.
Get ready.
So merry. It's going to be the merriest Christmas you've ever had. Or non-denominational role play holiday.
Fantasy holiday. Excellent. Cool.
Yep.
See you then, everybody. Bye.
Bye.